It is a special of All About Counter-Strike, Star Ladder, Star Series podcast, all wrapped into one. I get to host the lovely OG Krizen. And now, it's going to take me a while to get used to this, even seeing you in the jersey, mate. But Passion International UA, however you want to be.
Passion UA JT.
Passion UA JT. That's what we're rolling with.
Yes, that's what we're rolling with.
Honorary Ukrainian at this point.
Happy to represent Ukraine.
There we go. So we're going to get into some things about just IGLing, careers, the difficulties and what you have to experience. But I want to, and I'll start with you, JT, because you've been at it the longer time. Becoming an IGL for you, how did it work? How did you do it? How did you go for it?
For me, it was pretty easy, to be honest, because since I was like 12 years old, I was playing like competitive video games.
Okay.
And I played some other games like in South Africa, like not professionally, but like in tournaments. Like
you were competing.
I was competing like in Battlefield and Call of Duty, mostly Battlefield. And even then, like on some of the teams I was on, I was in-game leading at that point in Battlefield.
That young?
That young, yeah. Like 13, 14 with like 25-year-olds on my team, I was in-game leading. So,
JG, you have to explain this. How were you at 12 years old leading like that?
I mean, maybe not at 12. I think it was more like 13, 14. But
it's still impressive. That's still super young. You just said this.
I don't know. I just wanted to like control the team back then because I was just the best player on the team.
Okay.
I think that's a lot. I think for a lot of players, that's why they started IGLing. If they started young, it's because they were just the best player on the team. So they were just doing that. Especially in South Africa, that was the case. I'm not sure like, now that it's more professional, it's not really like that because there's always an older guy on the team that knows what he's doing. But now I think, for me, it's just been natural since then.
And your first CS team, you just in IGL from the beginning?
My first few CS teams, I IGL'd. And then when I first joined Bravado, which was supposed to be my first big team, I wasn't IGLing at the start.
Okay.
But after we moved to America, after a few tournaments, TC actually like spoke to the team and said like he thinks that JT should just go an IGL for the team. And then since then, I haven't really stopped since then. That's good. I was doing it before, but I stopped for like maybe like a year and a half. I didn't really want to do it anymore. And then TC just said to the team that I should do it.
Okay. Prism, for you.
I think I started at a similar age, actually.
Oh, wow.
My story is a bit different because for me, I got into CS at like around 11. I hadn't really played anything like FPS wise before that point. So it was like my first shooter. And at the time I started playing like on a team with my brother and Sia, who actually plays at a pretty high level as well. And two older guys. And we started playing some of the Danish divisions and grinded a little bit together. And I think I had, since I started playing with my brother, always kind of been, because I'm the older brother, I was more mature. So I just kind of took the leadership role in that sense.
Yeah.
And I just continued with that basically throughout my teams because that's the way I started. And I think it came natural. So yeah, I felt like it was a good choice.
Are you the oldest brother?
Yeah.
Okay, you don't have any brothers older than you?
No, I only have a younger brother, two years.
So who got you into CS?
Actually, a friend of mine kind of started it for me. But I think like very fast after I was introduced, I kind of went with it myself, you know. I was really hooked actually from the first time. So yeah, pretty good.
What is it though that like drew you guys to being an IGL? Like what was the, you said control, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of just like, for me, that sounds bad, but I was kind of just like a control freak when I was playing games. Just I always wanted things to be like the way that I thought was correct. And it wasn't always correct, of course. But for me, that's just, I always felt like if I was in charge, we were going to be more successful. And that was just my thinking back then. So maybe a little bit ego-driven for me.
But you need a bit of that ego.
I was about to say, I think I had very much the same thoughts. Yeah. Okay. You know, I think it was also, I felt like it was best for everyone. You know, that kind of mentality back then. So yeah, that's why it started.
So you think it's best for everyone in your view, but obviously, you just said it. You can't make the right call every single time. You're not always going to be 100% right. Is that something, though, where you're the one willing to take charge? Do you have to have that ability to know, like, when to strike, when to do things inside of you?
I mean, I think definitely. And I think also just on that topic, I think that's one of, like, the hard things for me was just, like, realizing when I was wrong and just letting other people like fix my opinion or just give me their point of view. But also when doing that, also letting them know that it's like it's still me in charge and I have to choose something and it might not always be their ideas or it might not always be the right idea, right?
Yeah. I think I got challenged a lot like in my early years because I played with my brother, you know? So there was a lot of like, I wouldn't say bad blood, but of course it was like, we went a bit hard on each other, you know, naturally. So I think, I learned from that, you know, that sometimes you have to stand with your own opinion, you know, and just basically commit to it. Because end of the day, especially in CS, if you just make a decision, usually you can gain away with a lot. So I think, that's the hard part, of course, but that's also the needed one.
Who do you guys learn from as an IGL? Like, how do you go about learning and improving yourself, you know? Because if you look at players in roles, cool, you can practice your entries, you can, you know, be the AWPer, you can do all the mechanical stuff. But for IGLing, how do you see the growth and stuff you've been through?
I think for me, at least, I was very self-taught because I started so early as well. So I was like, I didn't really have anyone, you know, on my teams that like could teach me in that sense. Of course, later when I went to Mouse NXT and also here in OG, I've worked a lot with the coaches, both Tobias and Lambert now, you know, which both have given me a lot of like different pointers, but also their experiences, you know, and shared a lot. But I think other than that, I've just tried to basically watch how other teams doing it, trying some stuff myself and naturally feeling it out. I think it's, as you said, it's a really hard role to like manage to learn in if you're starting as a for yourself. So I mean, I think the only like right way is just by doing stuff, you know, and seeing how it works out.
Yeah, I think mostly when I was younger, like learning from it was just doing it like every day and just like trying to come up with new ideas. I think that was like my favorite part of in-game leading was just coming up with new ideas that I haven't seen before and stuff like that, which nowadays you don't see that much of that because everyone just steals like what everyone's doing. Like everything's already been done. But back then, like especially when I was in Sarafia, like there were so many things I could do that was new.
Yeah.
Because the game was also new. I was in a small region and stuff like that. So that was fun for me. But I think also just having like older players on my team, like when I first joined Bravado, especially, I had like some veterans in the South African scene that were able to like teach me like things that they learned through the years. And now even every time like a new player joins a team, like it doesn't matter where they come from, they always have something that I can learn from, especially with like the way their team used to do things in terms of calling and leading the team. And then obviously, like you said, just like the coaches. The coaches is like the biggest thing for an IGL. Yeah. It's like teaching them new things or telling them when they're wrong. Because it's sometimes it's difficult to see when you're wrong, when you're just like the guy making the decisions. But I'd see like the coaches are usually the ones that's like calling you out and saying like that you can't, like this kind of round's not going to work. We need to change it this way. And it's easier for them.
Yeah, that's very true.
Looking at in-game leaders you guys maybe looked up to, was there some specific in-game leaders you put your like focus your style on, tried to copy in some ways?
I mean, for me, for sure, because I started playing when Astralis started their like era. Clay was the big one for me at first. I think also Kerrigan, again, because Danish, you know. So I looked at a lot of those guys, but I think throughout the years I've like looked at many different IGLs. I think when the online like COVID hit, you know, that era of CS, I looked a lot on what they call the Gambit with Nefany.
Youngsters,
exactly, and tried to learn from them. So I mean, I think that's also one of the fun things about being an IGL. You have to adapt a lot, you know, over time, and try to see what other teams are doing and trying to fit it into your own vision and system. So I think there's probably not a team I haven't watched from, you know, at this point, I would say.
Okay.
So,
I think the same. I mean, I've obviously watched Astralis. I think everyone, if anyone's playing CS during their time, they were watching Astralis. And, but for me, when I was growing up, especially like right before I moved to the US, I was like, I think Fawn was always my favorite IGL just because of like the story that they had, like coming from like a smaller region. I know it's a big region now, but back then it was a smaller region. He was going to moving to America and doing all these things, and that's what I was dreaming of doing. So like for me, I always watched like every game that Fallen's team back then was playing, and that's like maybe just like my inspiration when I was learning how to IGL.
Awesome. Now, from looking at how you IGL, what is it that you understand where the coach can help you? You were saying a bit about how, okay, sometimes coaches are the one that can point out your mistakes and things as well. But like, how does that relationship work? Because you have a long history with your coach, right? Does that make things easier? Has that just become like a natural thing? Was there ever some difficult moments?
I mean, between me and TC, it was always been, there was of course difficult moments, like arguments and stuff like that. But I know with him, like we were always, it was always just like part of the game, like trying to like make sure we're moving forward and stuff like that. Sometimes there has been like periods where it feels like we're kind of just too much on the same page, so we're not learning much. But I think like we're both like super hard workers, and we're just like always looking for like the edge, and it's been pretty easy to work with him for me.
Yeah, I think for me, I've only really like worked with two. Of course, you have also only worked with like one, right, for the most of your time.
One and then like a one or two, like exactly. Now.
So I think it's hard because as you also mentioned, it's like sometimes you get too much on the same page, and that can be really tough when that happens, because then you don't get that like anyone to point out all the like maybe mistakes that you could be doing, you know, with your calling and such. So I think it's about not getting too comfortable and always like trying to search for new stuff. I think for me with and Lambert, it's also about like of course a lot of trust, because whenever he points something out, it's always for the greater good of the team and also for me. So I think it's just about like having a lot of belief in each other, and of course, so I think it helps if you are like you can manage to also be friends and not just colleagues, you know. Yeah. And at the end of the day, because then it's also gonna feel more natural, and in those tight games or moments, it's gonna you're really feeling like you have each other's back, so it's nice.
Yeah, I think also the other thing that like a coach helps with is just I think nobody's like a complete leader, in my opinion at least. Like, I'm definitely not. I'm not very good with like the people things and like the motivation for the team, inspiration. But okay. TC is like, if anyone knows TC, they know he's like a super charismatic guy and like super motivational and easy to work with, and everyone like enjoys having him around.
Mm-hmm.
So like he kind of like keeps everyone in check and makes sure like the team is running as good as possible outside of the game, which helps me a lot, because that's something I know that I'm not the best at.
So do you think it's good where your coach can complement like your weaknesses and your strengths, like you can bounce off each other like that?
Yeah, exactly. I think like if you and the coach are too similar, it might be like things that you're missing that you could have had from somebody else. But if you guys are like complementing each other with different strengths, it's like it obviously makes like a better complete picture.
How do you split things up between coach and IGL? Like, what's the way of who does what, how things should go? Because it's already...
I think, like, for me, it's been very different, you know, from coach to coach, actually, even though I've only worked with two. But, like, the way we handle stuff was, like, I would say, I think with Tobias back at the time, we were very much, like involved in everything. Like, I did everything with him. I think now, when we have... Also, because we play a lot, you know, and there's a lot of important games and such. And we also have Killersu, which is our assistant coach. I feel like I give more trust, you know, to them with some of the stuff, maybe some anti or some stuff that has to be prepared to prac, which I think you need to, as a leader, you need to give up like some of that responsibility at some points. And I think that's the hard part, because as you also mentioned, like I am a control freak for sure. I want to be like sure and on top of everything. So I think that's like, it's a really hard balance to find. But I think with Lambert now, there's some stuff that I do for the team, which he's not like involved in. You could say, of course, we talk with each other, but still like he trusts with me. And then the same goes for him, you know, vice versa. So, yeah.
And I think the nice thing about like letting other people bring things that you need is just as an IGL, you get to focus on your own game and focus on improving as an individual. I think there's some people that, like when they're leading, they struggle to focus on like death matching as much as they can, playing faces, stuff like that. But if you have like coaches that you trust to do the extra work for you, then you'll have time for that at least.
Yeah, that's true.
And looking at that, right, both of you can frag out as IGLs. You definitely...
Thank you.
Sometimes.
I'm not going to say it's every game. I'm not going to lie to you boys. But I mean, you're not like bottom stat the whole time, in-game leader type players, right? How do you try and manage that? Because it is what we see a lot of in-game leaders struggle with. So what's the tips or tricks here on like how you can actually manage your own performance? Because like sometimes I remember when you took back control of the team and you, I think it was just after Elige left, right? And JC was back to running and popping heads and taking a hell of a lot of space.
I think it's hard. I think some of it is role-based. Like mm-hmm. for some maps, it's easier for me personally because I'm playing in positions that I'm comfortable in. But then like as the leader, sometimes you're playing in positions where it's not possible to get any kills.
Yeah.
So I think for some players, it's not that they don't have time to like be the best player that they can be or get good stats. It's just they're not playing in the roles that help them do that. Like some people, they're just throwing nades every round. When there's no nades, they're just running in first and dying to an AWP. So it's just, it is what it is. But in terms of like getting the time, like how do I like make sure I can actually frag? It's just I play like a lot of face hits personally and deathmatch okay. and try and watch my own games back personally and actually put some focus of the team onto my individual performance. Because mm-hmm. in my opinion, I think like it's way easier for the rest of the players if I can actually also hold my own.
Yeah.
But it's not that I don't think that the players can win without me. Like it's just, there's just a different way of looking at things. Mm-hmm. And I know Krizen also just like also frags that. I think it's like a, what, a 1.07 rating right now, something like that, which I'm is very that. Impressive for an IGL. So I think just my view is just making sure that you have time for your own own individual performance.
Yeah. I think I very much agree with what you said. I think, especially for like, I think of course it's role-based, but I also think looking back at your own games and playing the face, it's really, and playing some DM is really important. But I also think like, for me at least, I look at it sometimes like I'm IGL, but I'm also a player, you know, like I play some of the like rotation roles. So I think for me, it's about also when you try to get better, you know, individually, like kind of separating myself from the IGL thinking and like trying to only look at myself as a player and maybe sometimes think, what would I tell myself if I was a player? What am I doing? Like, because I think some IGLs kind of fall into the trap of like, okay, I'm a space creator, so I just have to create space all the time. And sometimes when you look back at game, maybe you don't have to create space all the time. And it's really tough and it's really hard because there's a lot of things you have to keep focus on. So it's very normal that you can lose track of it. But yeah, I think, of course, it helps if you just move your, like, what's it called? Like your ceiling or your floor up, sorry. Mm-hmm. So you have a higher ceiling and so on. So. Yeah, DM phase, it's very, very important. I think underestimated for some.
Now, what I found interesting about both of you guys is that not in all of your players, but you've had times, you now and you in the past with Elige, you've had players who have more experience, more game knowledge, right? More championships in Elige for you. And then you had Nikodos, who you still got now, right? How do you manage a relationship like that where, like I know for Elige for you guys, he wanted to do so much, talk so much, communicate so much. Was that hard? Because you want this control?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it was definitely hard to deal with that because, like you said, I want to control the team. But I think, like, if you want to win, things are going to be hard. And the thing is, Elige, if you're using the example of Elige, like, he just really wants to win. So he brings everything that he thinks that we should be doing. He brings it to a team and tries to get us to do it and do it how he wants to do it because he really believes that that's the way to win. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the stuff that he brings is really good. But he's very, like, I think in my opinion, if you want to win, you want to be like number one or top five, like practices are going to be hard because you have to be hard on yourself. You have to, I don't know, they're just the way that it is, I think. And I already like enjoyed that with Elige, that he would always bring things for us to improve upon. Or he always like speak to the team and just tell us what we're doing wrong. Even if it was just like every day, because we weren't like the best team in the world. So every day we're just trying to improve as much as we can. And I think that was like the fastest we improved. Like when we had Elige, like it wasn't like just because Elige is amazing that we're playing well. It's because Elige helped us with a lot of things.
Okay.
And I think like bringing in someone like that to any team is like going to like just up their ceiling, like you said.
Yeah.
But did he ever step on your toes? Did you ever have...
Oh, all the time. I mean, I would step on his toes, you step on my toes. TC would be in there trying to get us to settle the arguments, stuff like that. But
okay.
It's obviously always worth it. Like we're trying to we're trying to decide on what the best is for the team. Just having an argument about that is worth it. Always worth it.
Mm. I think for us, it's kind of, again, a little similar. I think when we brought on Nico, he, of course, had a lot of experience that we didn't have as team, but also as individuals. And I think for me personally, as I mentioned also, I'm very self-taught, with my IGL. And of course, Lambert had worked with me for half a year back then at that time. But Nico also came and brought me a lot of pointers, which was really nice. So I could evolve as a player and also as an IGL. I think he definitely lifted a lot of our low points, within the team. Right. I think I can relate a bit to also Nico wants it. He likes to also come with some of the stuff that he wants to do in his way, kind of like with Elish also, where he will he wants to be involved. Which I also think is nice because he needs to, because he's a very important part of the team. So he needs to form the way we want to play a little bit. And sometimes, yes, it can be hard to manage. First, you want to, of course, keep everyone happy, but also at the same time, make sure that you don't lose track and still have an identity. And I think it's a long and hard process and something that keeps going on with time. And you still, you have to work on it each and every day. So yeah, it can be exhausting, but also really nice, I really like Nico, and I think he does a lot of good, with the pointers he comes with.
I think that's also an important thing you said, though, is just keeping the identity of the team, making sure everyone's, if we're going to be bringing things and working on something, that we're all moving in the same direction.
Yeah.
And you heard what the FaZe guys always, the FaZe guys said, they were always changing things every week, and then that's not really how you want to do things. You want to just decide on a plan that you want to do, decide on a direction you want to go, and try and improve in that way. And I think that's usually the hard part, is making sure that everyone's on the same page when you have so many vocal people on a team.
And for you, you're young, you're 19, right?
Yeah.
Nico obviously has a lot more experience in this sense. I said Nico does, because some fans will complain that we're saying the wrong name on this. But does that make it a bit harder in when you have to have a conversation with him, or you feel like you hold your own?
I mean, I don't think I've ever had the problem where my age comes into account. I think then it's because, then people will bring, I don't know if anyone at least I've played with have thought about that, but it doesn't seem like it.
You do seem more mature than what your age is from when I first met you to talking to you here now. But that might help with it. It's just, I always wondered maybe if you being younger, less experience on paper, getting that respect from the players as well.
I mean, of course, it's easy for me to say, but I think when you meet me and play with me, it's very easy to tell that I've always been more mature, than my age might suggest. I think with Nico, he's very good at listening to others as well, which I think is a really important skill to have. So it's never been a problem with him having to get my thoughts out there, and he's also been really willing to adapt, which also I think is one of the his strengths. So we get a lot of good out of each other. I would say, of course, we don't agree always. That's how it is, and I think sometimes we can also get on each other's nerves, but it's important we get there, because we always get a bit of solutions out from that. So yeah, I think it's been good.
Now, next thing I want to look at, staying on the player side of it, is giving freedom to players. How do you know when to give that freedom, to take it away from? How do you make these decisions as leaders?
I mean, that's a difficult question, because it depends. I feel like freedom is always different in everyone's minds. Some people just think freedom, just do whatever you want. But then for some teams, it's the team is loose and they have freedom, but there's obviously a structure to the way, the things they can do. It's more they could just choose from a list. Some teams, the freedom is just choose from this list, do one of those things.
You can have this, this, and this.
So I think it depends on the teammates that you have, especially also depends on how good they are at communication. Because if you want to play a loose style with a lot of freedom, or you want to give someone freedom, they're going to have either they're going to have good communication, or the players with them are going to have to be very aware of what they're doing to actually be able to work together as a team. So I think in terms of giving freedom to people, is I'll give them as much freedom as they can use, as long as they're able to vocalize what they need. And I mean, it doesn't mean like they have to just say every single word. Like we can speak as a team, like in practice, like, cool, they want to do this kind of play. Let's name it this. And let's have these kind of variations with it. And if you want to do this, just say this, also this combo. And then people can actually work together as a team without having to be a whole like script on a piece of paper. Right? And that's kind of like the, like how I'm trying to give people freedom.
I mean, it's, yeah, as you said, kind of, it's like it's a give and take situation where I give you something, then you also have to bring something back, you know?
Yep.
And I think if people don't manage to do that, then of course the freedom will slowly go into, you have this list and then you choose, you know, like.
Does it ever get to no freedom, listen, do? Or...
I mean, very few times I've had that problem, but I think when I started at least calling, I had a lot of freedom and I think that was too much. Like basically every round it would just be like, we could play default and then I just mid-rounded from there, you know?
Okay.
And I think that's too much, especially in the way CS is played now in CS2. I think you need some sort of like idea or objective, you know, coming into a round. But at the same time, I also like now to like make sure that people get to do their own stuff. We mentioned Nikodos earlier. He has a lot of freedom, you know, within our team, gets to do a lot of different things. Also, sometimes, even though he's an orber with a rifle, we make sure to manage that.
I want to talk about this, actually, because I call him a fraud orber.
Yeah, a fraud orber.
He's a fraud orber. Because he can hit the orb. He can do it. But it doesn't look like he wants to play with the orb. He looks like sometimes he's a better rifler than an orper, and he enjoys it more.
I think for him, it's like, at least we've talked a lot about it, of course, because it was also very new to me, you know, when he came. But I think it's a lot of times, actually, when you listen to him and you know, like his reasoning behind it, it's actually because he's a smart player, you know. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's very map dependent, but also, of course, opponent dependent if he plays an orb or not. Because a lot of times, like, he can give me the option, you know, with my calls to play very, very fast, which you probably normally wouldn't do with a more traditional player, Orba. So I think having that element to our game brings makes people like, you know, a bit more iffy, you know, what we're going to do. And he's a bit of a curveball in that sense. But I think he can, fraud Orba, I don't know. probably wouldn't call him that, you know, like, I think that's a bit like harsh. But he's a... I think he's good. I think, it's very much like up to our anti-strat, but also, yeah, the map and such, you know. Yeah. So it's a bit weird, but we manage.
It's something different. Doesn't mean it's wrong, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And you guys make it work. But that's why I call it like a fraud orper, because he can do it all and he doesn't have to rely on it. It's like,
that is true.
I mean it in the funniest way possible, based on how he is as a person as well, trolling the whole time.
He is. He is a troll. That is
true. And he has a lot of fun with it.
Mm. Yeah, but no, just really quick, the freedom thing. I just wanted to say, like, I think it's something, I think, in more recent times that we see a lot of teams kind of give less and less of, I feel like. Because for me, at least, and you can't know ever, of course, without being on a team, but it looks like people are moving more and more towards playing a more set strat way, you know, where we play the objective, we play to end on the side, if we can, within the first, basically, minute, you know, or so, if we don't get... what do you call it, like blocked or killed basically throughout that
time period. I think definitely the top teams are moving towards that. Like when we were playing now at Draculand, the two teams that we played, we were actually very caught off guard by a lot of things they were doing. It's because they were playing like extremely loose and extremely free, and I'd say like most of the teams and most of the practices we've had this year hasn't been like against that kind of style, and it can be very surprising. So I think, I mean, in my opinion, the best way is to have a bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that, like, I think most teams are moving towards just playing more of a structured style and having a, like you said, like a set goal for the round and stuff like that. But I think that's where, even though there's like so much structure, that's where like top IGLs like come free, because like when mid rounds start happening, that's when they get a chance to actually speak and make the right decision. Like, just like that. Yeah.
Now another thing I want to look at is how you deal with players either maybe having too much confidence, or I've seen it in your case before, JT, like some players lacking confidence, you know? How do you handle that? Because for you, you already said that TC takes over a bit more of this emotional side. What do you do in the middle of a game? Maybe if he's got no timeout, something's happening.
Having no confidence. I mean, if it's the middle of the game, it's kind of hard to deal with it. But
there was a time, right, where you guys were, I remember doing interviews with you guys, and it was tough. because you guys were just struggling, fighting, doing your best, but it wasn't a pretty time. And how do you manage that as an IGL, as someone who's trying to go to all these tournaments, play these games, push through it all?
I mean, honestly, it's hard. I don't really have like a real answer. I mean, for me, if I notice someone in the team or just like the team in general is struggling, I'll try and just like put a little extra effort in for them and just try and call some plays for them that's going to get them back into the game.
Yeah.
But obviously that can also work in the opposite way. If it doesn't work, they might even feel worse.
Still not doing it. Yeah.
But I guess the game will be over soon if it's because but I mean, I'd say in the middle of the game, it's hard to, sometimes it's even hard to tell when someone's struggling with confidence. I mean, when people are tilting or like getting annoyed and stuff like that, it's easy to tell. But if they're just playing and they're just struggling, it's obviously, there's no way for me really to tell just without asking them myself. But I think it's important to know that for some people that like, it just takes one round for them to be back in the game. And,
yeah.
Like they can just play and just let them keep playing and eventually a round will come and they'll be back in the game and it'll be fine.
Yeah. I think, yeah. Of course, it's very different from person to person, yeah. So I think that's the hard part, of course. And also as a leader, you know, managing that. I think for me, I use at least a lot of time outside of like, not when we are playing, but like before the point, you know, asking people, how can I tell? Like, where do we need to help you? Is there something, like, when you feel this way, we can do? So it's a very, like, we try to be very transparent about it within the team, you know, when people lack confidence or stuff like this. So I get the tools, but also other players, you know, if they notice, hey, he's a bit quiet now, maybe he needs a bit of, like, hype or whatever it could be.
Yeah.
He gets it. So, yeah, I think... that's the most important part. Again, of course, it builds on trust, but like the people are willing to like open up, you know, and talk about that sort of stuff. Because I think now with the games being so fast, you know, because it's MI12, of course, it's like it can be over with a pistol round and a full by round, and then suddenly you are like in the bin, you know. So you don't really have time for people to like confidence or be mad or sad, you know. You just need to keep going and pushing. So yeah, it's very important to try to find those small cues and reset fast.
Now, I want to talk about the grind of CS and where we're at currently. For you, it's probably going to be a little bit different because you've been through multiple versions of what this looks like. But how do you find the grind of current CS? We're trying to claim all these VRS points. I'm not talking just about VRS, but just find your way back up. And also managing the strat book and managing how you reinvent yourself, you know, like, it seems more intense now than even before.
Yeah, I think, I mean, for us this year, we've had some longer stretches without tournaments, but in certain periods when you have like tournament after tournament after tournament without like a week break or 2 week break, it's hard to update things. So usually like the way that we would do it is just like, just trust in the team and just go right before the next match. It's like, cool, we want to change the strat to this or make this new strat and we're just going to run in the match. And we do that pretty often. I think a lot of teams probably do that because I think it's easy to have the understanding of like if a strat would work or not, or just if your team would be comfortable running it. But I think that's just the way to go. If there's not enough time to practice, the only way to like actually update things is to just add it on the day. And that's just how it is. But that's usually when you're winning games where you don't have that time. Because if you're losing games at the tournaments, there's always like this 2-3 days where you can change things and go back to practice. But it's like I think around the time when we were like top 10 with Elige and we had these constant tournaments, it wasn't like we were winning the tournaments, but we were going deeper and we realized, okay, this is actually something that's new for us because we don't have much time to actually practice. And to like, in order to like stay consistent without like adding new things was difficult for us because we weren't used to that.
I think, for us, it's of course very different because I've basically throughout my whole career, I've played online games over and over.
Grind.
That is really the VRS dream, you know? Like, you just tournament after tournament after tournament. So, I mean, like, usually for us, it's been like we play 3 or 4 tournaments, it's like on top of each other basically throughout the year, you know? And then we, of course, sometimes, as you said, if you lose fast enough, you can get a bit of practice in. We've been so fortunate that we've went far enough, you know, in most of them and also played a lot. So it's hard to manage the practice. I agree with you. Sometimes if things have to be done, it has to be done on the day. And I think for us also, it's like about sometimes because we play, I would say, still lesser opposition. Sometimes because we play so many different tournaments, you know, so you don't really like, it's the same teams, but there's a big gap usually like between which teams you play, like in those online tournaments. So sometimes it's about, okay, can we get away with running the same stuff again, you know, maybe like just pray that they haven't watched too much or don't understand how to counter it. And yeah, it's a fine balance. And I mean, now, of course, we, as OG, we're playing Star Series, you know, and then we play a lot of other lands, you know, coming in this next week. So yeah, it just keeps going. And hopefully at some point, we'll have some time for some practice, you know, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think the one thing I've been mentioning is just when, in these online tournaments like OG is playing, like a lot of these teams are playing like, I don't know, like 120 maps the last 3 months. So they don't actually have a lot of time to actually anti-strat you. So just, everyone's just playing like 3 VO3s a day, especially in Europe for the people that are grinding for Europe VRS. And that's not something that we really experience like on our team because we're in the NA ranking and we haven't played that many online tournaments. But I know like from speaking to other people, just like preparation for these kind of games online is not the same as preparation for these LAN games. Because when these LAN games, I know like 3 days in advance, I'm going to play this team.
Yeah.
I have nothing before it. So I'm watching slowly, seeing what kind I want to run. But when you're playing these online games, it's like 20 minutes before, like, cool, this is the map. And you quickly load up Skybox, watch the demos. Like, there's no way the whole team will be on the same page how to anti-strat something. So. Yeah.
But it's so true. Like, I've sometimes when we have had like 3 games in a day, and it's like, okay, we're doing hard entry for one game. Then the next one, we might do a little. And then the last one, yeah, we just go watch it like, right before you just. And that's the worst thing if you have to play like the same team twice a day, you know, like that has happened before with us.
You played the same team twice in one day?
Yes, in different tournaments. And then you just have to like, okay, do we use the same anti or do we change it up, you know? Like, that's all. So, yeah.
Have they changed up? Are we going to change it up?
Exactly.
Is this going to happen?
It's really hard. You have to, it's a mind game.
Yeah, that's pure chaos. That doesn't sound fun at all.
I mean.
But you're getting through it.
Yeah.
You're doing
that
it.
That is true.
Yeah. All right, looking at voices in a team, what do you guys want, both as your own individual leaders? What's good for you in terms of, we already touched on like Elise and Nikodos, but like, let's talk about everyone's voice in the team during a game, having input. What's it look like?
I mean,
your ideal world, this is.
For me, most importantly, I think that the AWP should have a big voice in the team, both like going for players that's going to get them as many kills as possible, and then also setting up the executes and things like that, because they're usually the one supporting the team. They're also usually the one that can see everybody else because they're in the back.
Okay.
So that's first thing, I think, usually most important for me. And then secondly, I think having people on both sides of the map that are able to assist me with the calls, especially the mid rounds. I think one example I could use is if I call something that makes sense from my side of the map, but on the other side of the map, I need that guy to know, like, if I call this, you need to be in this position, otherwise it won't work. And they, like, I need them to take charge of that and just tell me like, I need to do this first before we can do it. And that actually helps a lot. And I think when we play tournaments and that's missing, it's really hard for someone to like lead the team without just like guessing or just playing fast. Because I think it's different when you play fast, but when you try and play slow and play mid rounds and stuff like that, it really just comes down to everyone assisting the one making the decisions or at least making some decisions themselves.
So it's not just for you like the whole secondary caller thing. You want like a third voice or kind of thing at times as well?
Yeah, I'd say like everyone needs to be able to do it. But I think the way it usually goes is that there's just someone that's in the most action, like usually the pack player or like the star of the team. He's just in the action all the time. So he ends up maybe being the second caller or sometimes it's the AWPer, like I said, because he can see everything. Yeah. It usually just somebody takes that like charge of that. But I find that like sometimes they're also just not involved or both of us aren't involved and people just need to like see the game from their perspective and give their opinion and I don't know, just try and win the round their own way.
I would say I very much agree with you. I think for me, it has always been the AWPer, you know, really taking charge. I think that's important. And then I think everyone, as you said, should be able to, like, in some form of way, kind of, like, get involved. I think especially, for the mid-round stuff. I think, yeah, everyone needs to get involved because people are so good. So mm-hmm. if you don't have everyone involved, you're going to miss out. And people are, yeah, just really fast at adapting. So if you don't have the full picture as a caller, you can easily just call you into like a four-man stack or something. You know?
Yeah.
But I think for what I've gotten told, at least by other places, I like to micromanage a bit and I talk a lot. So sometimes I have a hard time giving up, you know, that responsibility. And mm-hmm. I think that's something I have to be better at, you know, with time.
Yeah, that's actually one hard part you don't think about. It's just when you're playing the game, it's like, why is no one else talking? But then you watch it back, it's like, oh, because I've just been talking the last 3 minutes straight. They don't have space to say anything.
You imagine giving them no room, you're just talking too much.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on micromanaging?
I think there's obviously a place for that, but I think not everyone deals with that the same way. I think some players really struggle if they're just being micromanaged or they're being told what to do. It depends on the situation and also on the player. Like, if I had to tell some players how they should play their position on the map when I'm not even there, like, it might just fuck them up because they won't know what I'm asking them to do. Yeah. Or they won't know how to play that way. That's just not what they're comfortable with. But if we're doing like certain specific strategies together and I need them to do something, like exactly something I need to obviously micromanage them and be able to do that. I think what's also nice is if other players are able to micromanage as well. Because when they're dead, I think especially when people are dead, they're able to see like the bigger picture and tell people mm-hmm. to move into the right, correct position. So if everyone practices that and gets good at that, it's actually a really good strength to have as a player, even if you're not an IGL.
Mm. And you said you did some of the micromanaging, right?
Yeah. I think I agree with you. But I think a lot of people have to be really good at like the death talking part because you get a lot of overview. And that's why I think like, some players can miss out, you know, because they see a lot and then they don't open their mouth enough. Yeah. And it's sometimes even when I make a call, you know, it can be really wrong when you have the overview, you know, and I can't see it because I'm maybe in action or something.
Yeah.
That's why I really like when people chime in, you know, and micromanage a little bit and make sure, okay, everyone is on the right path. Maybe even overcall me, you know, if it makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's again, that builds on trust. So yes. With time, you get better.
See, in my day, we're going back years and years and years. If you were dead, it was like rule number one, don't talk, don't communicate. But for you guys, you both seem to be saying that like, you want them to be adding more to it. You want them to be helping.
I'd say it's almost the opposite sometimes, depending on the map and the situations. Like, we want the dead people to speak and make decisions for the people alive so
they can just
focus on playing the game. It's like almost like just like someone
bird's eye view,
like in the air just speaking to you, telling you what to do, and all you have to do is just shoot people. And then if you're able, that's what I was saying, if you're able to micromanage well, and at least in a way that's easy for the people to play, then it's actually a really good strength to you. So I think especially for people that like openers and stuff, like people like Elige or like Donk, where they die really early in the round, if they're able to like add that to one of their strengths, it's actually going to be really beneficial for the team.
Now, I also want to look at just giving some experience helping with each other here. Is that like, what is the hardest thing you've had to experience during your whole career as an IGL? What's the most difficult part of this role? JT's got a longer career, so you can start first on this one, my friend.
Hey, I'm trying to think of it. It's a hard question. I think the hardest thing that I had to deal with, honestly, I don't know. I don't have an answer to that.
Really?
I think for me, it's also hard because, of course, there's different stuff that has been hard mm-hmm. with time. But I think looking back, I mean, yeah, I have not played for so long, you know, but still, like, I wouldn't be able to, like, pinpoint one point where I was like, okay, that was, like, so tough I couldn't manage or we didn't mm-hmm. get over that or I had to, like, I don't know, take a break, whatever, you know, because it was so hard, you know, for me to deal with in some way. I think I've definitely had times where I felt like the way we were playing was wrong. And I thought maybe it was me who was wrong with or mm-hmm. something like, but maybe, yeah, where we were out of solutions in some way, you know? But I think with time, it always like it seemed to change, you know? I think it's just about keep like trying really, because even when you feel like, okay, there's no light at the end of the tunnel, there usually is. So I think for me, it's always been like that, you know? I just continue and then find the right way at some point, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the same. Like, looking back at the things that at the time I thought was hard, it wasn't really, like, that hard. I always kind of got through it within, like, a week or two. Yeah. But I'd say, like, if I had to say something, I'd say when there's, like, what's the word I'm looking for exactly? Like, when players are, like, when there's inner turmoil on the team, I think always hard to deal with because people, like, if people's relationships are being hurt and people are struggling with each other, it's hard to get them back on track. It's kind of, it's in their own hands. But as a leader, like, you want to help them, especially if you want to keep the team intact. So I think at times when stuff like that's been the case, which it hasn't been often, I think that's been hard moments for me.
You're smiling. If you already
you want to keep the team together, I mean, yeah, you know, maybe you don't, then you just
let it go.
Yeah, exactly. Let it boil. You know? But...
All right. What I want to come on to next is looking at if you ever look at player changes, right? And new players coming in now, you both had to deal with this, right? How hard is that as an IGL to go through? Is there a set way of doing it? Okay, I've got this new player coming in. I'm going to, like, right now, you got the craziest challenge because you've got Vem coming in, who comes from a completely different style of CS and a way of playing, right?
Yeah. I mean, the way I like to do it is just, my opinion as IGL, I want to make the other players comfortable, like as comfortable as they can be. So the first thing I do is, I mean, this is the first thing I want to do, but it's not the first thing we did.
Okay.
I'll explain why, but the first thing I want to do is just ask the player, like, what are the ways that they want to play? What kind of plays do they like? How did the other team play? And did they actually enjoy playing that way?
Sure.
So I can just see, like, where to start, where I start, and what kind of things that the guy likes to do. I mean, this time around, we didn't do that because we had a tournament within, like, 5 days. So I think the other way of doing it is just like, well, this is the stuff we have. We're going to just do them and just go with it. But I think that's honestly the wrong way to do things because everybody's different. So the things that they're good at is not the same things that somebody else is good at. Just speaking to the players or just having watched the players, it's easier to make them comfortable just knowing, like, what they like to do. It's just easy as that.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I agree. I think, at the start is always a lot about, like, trying to get on the same page with the guy, you know, you're getting in. Of course, we also brought on two new guys, like, at the break here. And I think for us, it's, of course, in some way, you have to change, like, the way you play also as an IGL. You know, you have to make them fit in. Yeah, listen to how did their former teams play? Do we like some of it? Do we want to keep, like, you know? And how do we work them in the new positions or maybe some of their old ones, you know? Now, how do they integrate into ours? So it's tough, but it's a lot about, just being transparent again and having good communication with each other.
Yeah, I think also what's important to know about that is if bringing in a player, if you wanted to play, of course, if you're bringing him in, he's obviously doing well in the system that they had. So you're going to want to bring some things in that they used to do because were obviously doing well playing that way. So we should try and at least implement some of it as long as it doesn't, like, impact the other players.
Yeah, that's also another balance you have to try and find, right? Change this, he likes it. Oh, but then something else breaks. Do you find that quite a lot in, like, when you're making changes or doing these moves or even just some strategical changes where you fix one thing and then something else falls off the back?
For sure. Like, that has happened a lot of times for us as well, where, like, you feel like you fix a problem then suddenly a new one arises, you know, and that's just how it is. And I think, that's like, it's always tough, you know, because you put so much attention and focus on one thing and then maybe you let something slip, you know, a little bit, and then it's like about getting back to it, you know. So that's tough, but that's also why it's fun, you know, to play CS. You need to fix stuff all the time. Be creative.
You must have had to do this a lot of times, right?
I mean, we haven't... No, actually, it's true, yeah. I've done that a lot of times, honestly.
He's like, no, actually.
We haven't made that many roster changes, but I'd say, like, we've changed how the way...
We just changed it strategically.
Just changed the way how we played so many times. Yeah. Like, I can think of so many examples where, like, somebody's struggling somewhere. I'm like, cool, we'll fix it by just... I don't know, moving someone there. And then when I start playing the rounds, like, oh, it's working. But then the next scrum we play, it's like, oh, it's not working. And then I realize, what, this feels horrible for me. Like, this guy was helping me before. And now it's just like, now I'm just alone. So, like, that's where I think being an IGL or coach is like really the hard part, is like trying to figure out which way was the best way, because both of them have their, obviously their own problems and their own cons, but like you always have to choose one. So
yeah,
you have to figure it out.
And how involved, it might be different for both of you, but how involved are you in the scouting process of new players, involved in saying what new players you want? How does it work?
For us, at least, I have a lot of say in like who we're looking at, also who's being brought in, of course. But like at the end of the day, it's like Lampard has the last word, you know, like he is the coach. So okay. he gets to, yeah, basically make the decision at the end. But I would say it's like he's very like good at listening to me and also taking in like my ideas, of course, because we, of course, have a lot of the same things that we value, but also the same philosophy. So I think, yeah, it's not like, I would never say I've been in a really big disagreement with him in that sense. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's been like talks about what we need and what we think we should value most, because it's not always, just because you need something, it's not necessarily because it's on the market or within your price range.
Is so, it always where you get to trial these players as well, or do you just kind of do it from demo watching or seeing and then?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's been different for us. Sometimes, or for the most part, actually, with OG here, I've trialed people with the guys we've had. But we've also had some where we've kind of, like, I would say, probably just brought them in after maybe one day of, like, okay, he feels nice.
And then it's like,
and then you can trust it, your gut feeling. But no, I think, again, it's Lampard, of course, who has the last say. But yeah, it's I'm very much involved, I would say, in that.
Yeah, I'd say it's the same for me. Like, it's not my decision who joins the team or who gets cut or anything like that. But my opinion is always asked, and I always give my opinion if I think things need to happen or don't need to happen. And the same is asked to me as well. Is they always ask my opinion on what I think we need and what we don't. And in terms of trialing players and stuff like that, I think sometimes that's hard to do, especially when players are within contracts and stuff like that. It's not really something that you can always do.
It makes it a lot harder.
And then I also think, like, in the NA scene, there's not that many players. So, like, everyone just knows each other. So those kind of things get out really quickly. And there's always not a lot of choices or teams. Like, especially, like, when we were in Complexity, a lot of teams were, like, it's not possible to just buy whoever you want. You can't just, like, it's not opening an HLTV forum and just, like, building your dream NA team. So, like, some players don't want to work with each other, or some players are not available, stuff like that. So just kind of just trying to build what's possible and also getting, like, a team that you enjoy working with.
And looking lastly, the thing that's always on everyone's mind, you're both. So for OG, 34th in the Valve rankings at the moment. For you guys, 40th right now in the Valve rankings. Sorry to bring it up. I know you're laughing already. Just give me your, JT, we'll start with you. Give me your initial thoughts on what it's been like going through VRS and what do you think of it, where it's at currently?
I mean, going through it for us, it's been very different compared to other years. I think for us, we were in all the partners things, so we didn't need to play like certain events. We were always like guaranteed events. And I think now, like, if you're lower ranked, you have to play like qualifiers, you have to play online events like they are. And we weren't able to play some of them again in NA, because we have to play the NA events, because all these online events in Europe are only for European teams. So we spend a lot of our time in Europe. And so we missed some events that I think that we should have played. So
are you going to go play more events in America now? Or are you like?
I'm not sure. That's the thing as well. So the thing is, like, we want to plan in advance what we play, but it's not possible because it depends on how you do with the LANs. So I think, like, for teams around our level, like, when you go to a LAN, you have to win games. Because if you don't win games, or at least don't win a few games, you won't get invited to the next tournament.
Yeah.
And then it's like the spiral just continues. So I think for us, when we played well at Bucharest and we won a bunch of games there and then won a game in Melbourne, that guaranteed us some invites for the future.
Yep.
But then when we struggled at those tournaments, like, we ended up, like you said, like, we ranked 40th and we weren't planning on playing on, like, certain online events that we declined.
Yeah.
And now that we
now
looked at it,
we're like
we should have played those, you know?
But that's hindsight. You couldn't have ever known it was going to be like this, right?
Yeah. So it's a little bit of a complicated system, especially because, like, events are region locked. You can't just play whatever you want. Like, you have to accept events in advance, and it can kind of mess up your schedule if there's certain events that invite you. If you get invited for one event in July and you accept, and then another event invites you in the next month and they're on the same days, it's like can be a struggle to organize. So I try not to think about it too much. I was always leaving that to the managers. It's like, I just want to focus on the game. You guys choose what we play. I'm going to focus on the game, try and win as much as I can.
You can also blame them when they mess it up. You're like, yeah, guys, this is your fault. It's not my fault. You were in charge of it all.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, for me right now, I don't need any visas, but for players that need visas, I think it's even more of a struggle.
Yeah.
Like, for example, with Orzok struggling with their visa, and like maybe players joining new teams that are going to like America and stuff like that, they need to get a visa, and it's kind of, it's difficult with the current process because you don't know what you're going to play. But I know that before this, like even during the partnerships, other teams needed to do that. It was just only the partner teams that were just privileged, like my team was, and it's just something new to learn.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's tough. I think the big thing with the way it works right now is, like, as you mentioned as well, if you decline something, it can easily come back to hurt you very fast. If you go to an event that you maybe planned on winning a couple of games and then you don't win those games, you know, suddenly you're like, really, it's going to be a really tough next 3 months at least, you know, with the invites. So I think for us, we have also, of course, like any other team, tried to manage this as best as possible. I think for we've tried to play, we're also in a bit of a different situation coming into the ranking of worst than you were, I would say. Still, we were way lower down. I think when we started, even before the major last year, we were like 80th in the world or something like
I can see you down. Let's go back over here. This is...
it was really bad at one point, at least, I can tell you.
There was 60th on the 3rd of March, 2025. That was even this year. Yeah,
but it was like, we were not even talking like group stage at these CCT events. It was play-ins, you know, at one point. So we had to play a lot of events. And I think now we're in like kind of a spot where we want to, of course, choose our events. But at the same time, you don't want to like decline too many online players. You can still, there's still points to gain from it. But we also like, we get playoff invites now. So if you take a CCT tournament, like I said, if you go in and you just play one bad game, then you're just out and you just lost points for no reason to a team that's probably like way under you. So you probably, you have to like, win two games probably to gain those points back or something. But that's the name of the game. And I think with time, of course, it'll make it better. And I think
do you really believe that? Like, you believe that it'll be fixed in time?
I think I'm trying to talk myself into believing it, you know, like I'm staying delusional.
I don't know if they'll make VLS better, but I think that the TOs will not come together, but they'll start building events that make sense for the VLS system, like these local LANs that are coming up. I know there's some talk about it, like where like they're only coming up because of like the major invites and stuff like that. But I think the way VLS is designed is that it's for teams to actually play on LAN, because that's where like the most points are gained. And like right now, when I think it's not working correctly, when a team goes to a LAN tournament and gains 100 points of one, which we could do that now at this event, like gaining 100 points from one LAN event and jumping up, like not one LAN event, one LAN match, and jumping up like, I don't know, 10, 20 rankings for some teams is kind of crazy. But I think it's mostly because like some teams aren't playing a lot of LAN, so they're not winning any matches at LAN. So when they go there, these matches are worth a lot more than they should be.
Sudden jump.
Yeah.
For us, for example, we don't have any, really. So it's the same. We have I think we only have the ones from the major we got, but we haven't played any lands. So now it's like, this is like probably the most valuable thing we can play, basically.
So doing well here for both of you, that can determine your major, right?
I would say, I think if we don't do well here, it's going to be, I'm not going to say there's no chance, but it's like, it's at the point where it's like really close to that.
But you do well here and you could make the major.
I would say so. It's like playing an MR. Just a bigger, you know, and like a bit more pressure, maybe.
Yeah. I think for he's an EU virus, so it's a little harder. But I think for us as well, if we win a few games, we're basically guaranteed for VIS just because of how many points we gain.
Yeah.
The first match is like 95 points. So for us, it's like a big deal. And then a lot of NA teams aren't playing.
Yeah, yours is just 95 points for one game.
Yeah. So if we do well, we can even get right now we're close to not making the major, but if we do well here, we can be almost stage three. I'd say, I'm not really sure, but I think so.
Yeah, okay.
That's a big jump up. That's crazy.
I feel like it's not for you guys necessarily, but like, I think the, what's it called, like the problem with these like land games is also like, we see the local lands being made like out of nowhere, which I don't understand, first of all, how it's possible. Because I thought at least with how I understand the thing, that they have to be out with the like invites and also the planning of the events like a couple of months before even.
Yeah, there should be time, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I think if it's an open land, it's only 2 weeks or something like that.
Okay, so that's why that's the point I probably did.
Don't quote me on that.
No, but like,
hey, Messioso was your manager. We can quote you on all of this. He's like VRS expert.
Yeah, but that's what I don't get. So I feel for me, it's like, it's really hard as an international team sometimes, you know, actually getting all those points. I think there's a lot of, now I'm going to have to be careful with my wording, but some teams are a little inflated, you know, like the national teams, because they can go to national events and local, like, whatever. And then they play, there's two really good teams and the rest are kind of like just people who want to play for fun, you know, and then they gain
almost mixed teams.
Yes, exactly. 50 to 100 points for a game. And it's like, it feels wrong, you know, in some way.
Yeah. But I think if people keep abusing it, then there won't be. If everyone has 10 land wins, it won't matter anymore.
That is true.
That's kind of what it's coming to.
So we just all need to win at one point.
Which is like the wrong, I think in my opinion, it's the wrong way to do things. Then people are just playing to play and playing in random events. I also just hope that these local lands that are coming out, especially like the national ones, are actually paying out and they're not just like there just for the points, you know, and because the higher the prize pool, the more points that you get on the BIS. So I hope that whatever they're listing is actually the truth for these players.
You got to hope Valve somehow is tracking this and understanding that actual distributed prize money, not just some Mickey Mouse money somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
But from what you guys are saying, right, it's not perfect. You slightly can understand how it, some of it's a bit of bug abusing if we compare it to in-game, but you're confident it can go in the right direction? Or are you starting to, do you feel like it is just fumbling?
To be honest, to mention something good about it also, it's like this, like it doesn't, what do you call it, like exclude anyone, which is nice, you know? So if you have the points, you get the invite. Not like before where we had partner teams, but also it was really tough for some online teams because they wouldn't get invites to all the like online tournaments
as well.
If you were on a bad standing with someone, then they just wouldn't invite you, you know? Mm-hmm. Nowadays, you don't have that option, so. I mean, that's also why we see a bit more cheating accusations going around, you know, as well. But I think that's positive. But I mean, I would say I believe that it's going to be okay with time. Like, it's not, I'm not sure if it's going to be the same or as good, but I would say it's manageable.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I would say more on that is just, I hope it doesn't kill, like, the smaller regions.
True.
Because right now, like, the only way to gain points is if it's on HLTV.
Mm-hmm.
And for some smaller regions, like for example South Africa, there's like not a lot of matches are actually on HLTV. I'm sure there's some other regions out there that aren't very popular, but for like those teams, it does mean something to them. Yeah. And they're kind of just being left out, which is kind of like against the point. But again, this is better than I'd say it's better than the partner system. Not in terms of like for the teams and stuff, but just for like the players where everybody's involved and able to actually get somewhere.
With some time and adjustment, hopefully we'll get there to the golden ticket at the end of it all. But Counter-Strike is still growing in a nice way. This has been a great conversation. Thank you very much for both of your times. JT, you outdid my expectations on this considering what we were talking about before.
Yeah.
You can do podcasts, see?
I can do whatever I put my mind to, I guess.
See, he was going to send TC. He was going to send TC in to replace him at one point. Or replace me, depending on which way you wanted it.
TC should have been on the podcast for sure.
He should have been. Right, next time we'll do some coach one. We'll get Lambo and we'll get TC.
That would be nice. I would love to see that.
See, look, even you would watch it. It's your coach. You have to watch it. He'd make you watch it.
Yeah, probably.
But thank you very much for all of the information and for yapping through all of this with me, guys. Good luck in the tournament.
Thank you.
Enjoy the game starting tomorrow.
Cool. Thank you.
Free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.